From KCPW in Salt Lake City, I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. How many ways can you say education? For thousands of Utah children, it's
Educación.
Or
Education.
Or even
Jiaoyu.
Utah leads the nation in the number of elementary schools that teach a second language, and not just in an after-school class. Students learn math, science, even grammar in Spanish, French, or Mandarin Chinese as early as kindergarten. How do you know if a language immersion program is right for your child? And when children add a second language to their academic diet, do they fall behind in other subjects such as math, spelling, or even English? Today on the program, Language by Immersion. Plus, how technology is transforming America's libraries. All that and your calls coming up after the news. Good morning. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. Language immersion programs are exploding in Utah's elementary schools, with well over thousands of kids learning their ABCs along with their ABCs. Why learn a second language at such a young age, and how does immersion work? Joining me now on the program, Carolyn Schubach. She's the Associate Director of the Dual Immersion and the Gifted Programs at Granite School District in Salt Lake. And Carolyn Schubach, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Also, Juan Freire is a university instructor and supervisor at the Urban Institute for Teacher Education in the College of Education at the University of Utah. He's also a former teacher at the Dual Immersion Academy, a charter school here in Salt Lake City. And Juan, thanks so much for being here.
Thank you.
Later on in the program, Salt Lake libraries are now offering books on the Kindle. How is technology changing the way we use libraries? But first, second languages from kindergarten on. What do you think about immersion programs, and would you send your child to an immersion classroom? Share your story. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. Carolyn Schubach, I want to start with you. Thousands of Utah kids are now enrolled in a second language in addition to their English instruction. Why is Utah such fertile ground for these programs?
Well, to begin with, our legislature gave us Senate Bill 40 in 2008, which helped us to get started with dual immersion programs. And we get some minimal funding to help us supply materials and training for our teachers and get started with what are called 50-50 programs. That's what we are funded for. That means the students spend 50% of the day with their instruction in English and 50% in the target language. And the legislature gave us funding for three languages, Spanish, French, and Chinese, and the programs must begin in kindergarten or first grade. And I'd say that the parents are really the driving force behind this. They are interested. These are optional programs. They apply for these programs. It's a choice. And I believe our legislature really believe that these kids need to be ready for the global economy, for jobs of the future, for diplomacy in the future, for being global citizens. And what gives you better edge on that than having the language of another country?
You said 50-50. Define exactly what a two-way immersion program
Well,
is.
Not all our programs are two-way. I'll explain the difference. 50% of the language is in the target language and 50% in English. We have two-teacher model. So, for example, we have the children would spend half the day in Spanish with, for example, in first grade learning math, science, and social studies in Spanish. During that half day, there's no English spoken ever. They are not just they're not learning a language formally. They're learning math, science, and social studies in the language. The other half of the day, they switch to an English-speaking teacher who teaches language arts, just like they would have regularly reading, writing, speaking in English. And so it's a two-teacher model, so we're able to run two cohorts of children through it, and they switch half day. A one-way program technically means the language is working one way. Chinese here is an example of that. Obviously, we don't have a lot of Chinese speakers, so the language is moving from the teacher to the children. It's moving, in a sense, one way initially. A two-way program is when you have, for example, Spanish speakers and English speakers in the class. So the language is moving back and forth. The Spanish speakers are speaking Spanish during the Spanish time, but when they're in the other English time, they're learning English. So the kids are learning both ways. That's the definition of one way and two way. So we have both programs, obviously, if we have French, Chinese, and Spanish. And many of our Spanish programs are two-way programs because we have Spanish speakers. Hmm. I hope that makes sense.
Yeah, it does. One, I understand that you were imported as a teacher for DIA, the Dual Immersion Academy, 4.5 years ago. How did your classroom work? And tell us like a day-to-day example of a child going through what you did at DIA.
So, that's a good question. I had a 50-50 model when I started working at Dual Immersion Academy, as Caroline just described. So I would start my day with one of these cohorts, one of these groups of students. We would be doing everything in Spanish. I wouldn't talk to them in English at all. And the first weeks were very interesting because a lot of our students did not understand me very much. So I had to do a lot of what we call scaffolding, which is like making the language comprehensible for the students. So I would be using a lot of body language, use a lot of materials. I would be drawing things on the whiteboard so they would be able to understand me better.
So a visual.
Very visual, very kinesthetic, a lot of things so they would understand me. And then the next half of the day, students would go to the English classroom, and I would be getting new students, this other cohort, and same thing, going through the content. And dual immersion, I like it very much because we're not doing which is called foreign language education. I would be doing math in Spanish, social studies in Spanish, science in Spanish. So it would be more meaningful. They are more motivated because they have to actually learn additions and subtractions in Spanish. So they want to learn to multiply. They want to learn to do these things, but everything was in Spanish.
Well, I imagine for young children, I mean, getting their attention span in their native language is tough enough. But to have a second language, you must have had some blank stares at the beginning of the year. Like, I have no idea what this guy is saying. How long did it take for kids to start, things started to click, you know?
It took a couple of weeks. I remember how some of the students were, like, they would kind of, like, be a little exhausted. Like, at the end of the day, they would go back home saying, oh, Mom, I'm exhausted, I'm tired. But, I mean, because they're doing, I mean, it's, yeah, and it's true. I mean, it's more demanding. I mean, we are not asking them only to learn the different types of animals in Spanish. I mean, just the types of animals, for example, but in Spanish. So, yeah, it's more challenging. I think it's great for any parents that want their children to go to a higher level.
Carolyn Schubach, tell me why so early? What are the advantages of learning a second language in the elementary grades, as young as kindergarten?
Well, there's lots of research about how much more natural and easy it is to learn another language and to learn basically even learning two languages at the same time. Mm. I mean, there are homes where parents are speaking two languages to a baby and they're able to speak both of those languages and not get them confused. We know that, you know, we need to start these programs early, kindergarten or first grade, and the legislation is that way, and it totally makes sense. We find the children are very natural with it. I know what Juan is saying because I'm in those classrooms, and those first few weeks, they're trying very hard to figure out what the teacher is saying, but they begin to understand. And initially, they're receptive language. They're listening and beginning to understand. They're not yet producing it as much themselves. But there's no question that learning languages early is much easier. We know. We obviously offer languages in our secondary school starting in seventh grade. And the level of proficiency that we get is nowhere near what we can get with these children by the end of sixth grade. And I think Juan makes such a good point, is the children are learning it in a real natural context. They would be learning that math or that science in first grade anyway, so they're learning the subject, same subjects. Now, keep in mind, we're following the state core. They're doing the same math, the same science, the same social studies as the kids in the regular, you know, English classrooms. But they're learning it in another language. And think of the cognitive challenges of that for a child. Like he mentioned that, you know, parents who really want their children challenged academically and cognitively, it's very interesting. And they really can do it at an early age.
We're speaking with Carolyn Schubach, Associate Director of the Dual Immersion and Gifted Programs at Granite School District. Also with us, Juan Fiere is a university instructor, a former teacher at the Dual Immersion Academy, a charter school here in Salt Lake City. We invite you to join us if you have questions or comments about immersion programs. 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. So how long does it take for a child to become proficient? And how do we measure proficiency?
You know, that's such a good question, Jennifer, because we're not there yet. I'll be honest with you. We've just begun. We're doing lots of work. We have a consultant working with us statewide on what should we be expecting in terms of language proficiency. We are only to the third grade with our French and Chinese programs. They were only started in 3 years ago. Statewide, we have 57 dual immersion programs following the state model. There's 31 Spanish, 9 French, and 17 Chinese. And we're watching very closely. We have some what we call formative assessments we use in the classroom so the teachers know what they should be expecting from the kids at each level. And we're going to be doing some national language testing with our kids to see. So we don't know yet. We don't have children to the sixth grade yet. In Spanish, we have a few schools in our state that go to fifth grade. We also have a plan statewide for moving these programs into the junior high school, because with Spanish in my district, we will have students in the junior high school in a year and a half. So we plan to have them continue with dual immersion, a little different model, in 7th, 8th, and 9th grade, and hopefully be ready to take AP Spanish, AP French, AP Chinese, by the 9th grade, which is typically taken maybe in the 11th or 12th grade when you start a language in 7th grade. So we're very, very closely watching. We have some folks doing some research with our kids on levels of language proficiency that the kids should have by whatever grade level.
That was one of my next questions. I mean, you start these kids in kindergarten. By 6th grade, they're doing really, really well. Mm-hmm. So are you prepared? Are districts starting to prepare for this onslaught of kids who are extremely advanced, going into Spanish 4 and 5
right.
in 7th grade?
Right. Yeah, we are prepared. We have a model that we work collaboratively. We have 14 districts statewide doing these programs. So we all work together, and we've developed a model for junior high school. Most of the junior high schools in Utah are 7th, 8th, and 9th grade. Some are 7th and 8th grade. The students will take a more advanced, I'll say Spanish for the sake of this, Spanish class, as well as one content class in the language, all the way through 7th, 8th, and 9th grade. We will have the same course, in this case in 7th grade. It will be social studies. And we're already beginning to develop the curriculum for that course that they will be taught totally in Spanish. So they'll continue to have the immersion experience, one period a day, then take everything else that a 7th grader would take, and one more advanced Spanish class, because obviously they're not going to be with children starting Spanish, the same in 8th grade and the same in 9th grade. Then by high school, they'll have the opportunity to take more advanced language in that language, college level, or even switch to a third language. So Spanish students may switch to French or Chinese or whatever. So yes, we have a long-term plan for these programs, because doing the programs grades 1 through 6 is really just the starting ground for becoming fluent in a language. And our goal, too, is bilingual and biliterate. Okay, it's very important that they become biliterate. The students are also learning to read and write in this language, not just speak the language.
We're speaking with Carolyn Schubach, Associate Director of the Dual Immersion and Gifted Program at Granite School District. Also with us, Juan Fiere. He's a former teacher at DIA, a charter school here in Salt Lake City. If you'd like to join us, we're talking about immersion programs at 801-355-8255. And let's go to the phones. And Asia is joining us from Salt Lake City. Asia, welcome.
Thank you. My son actually has been to both DIA, and now he attends AltaView, and he's in Spanish immersion. And I just have to comment that there is a huge trade-off between academics and learning the language, because I found when my son was at DIA that his academics were actually quite horrific, to the point where I was going to pull him out until he actually moved. And now that I'm at AltaView, I really appreciate a lot more, because it's 50-50. They learn a lot more things in English. And his academics have improved greatly, whereas before it was 90-10, and maybe he understood Spanish, but he couldn't read. And that was, like, a huge factor in whether or not I would do immersion again, and something that I think parents need to to look at. They have to be willing to spend time with them after school on things that they don't spend time with them in school.
Asia, how old was your child when you started in the immersion?
Was he 5 or 6? He started in first grade.
Mm, okay. And you're satisfied with the switch to 50-50?
I'm absolutely satisfied with the switch. I think also part of the problem at Dual Immersion Academy, and I'm sure that your guests can actually speak on this, was that a lot of the children who attended there were actually Spanish speakers. In my son's class, there were 25 students. He was the only student that English was his first language.
Mm.
So that bothered me a lot. It was nice because he actually probably understands Spanish better than his counterparts now in his school. But it wasn't beneficial because the academics were really, really poor.
Mm. Asia, thanks so much for the call. I think Asia brings up a good point that a lot of parents are worried about is, okay, if you're focusing on a second language, are the math skills, are the spelling and the English reading skills going to have going to be sacrificed? Juan Freire, how would you respond to that?
And what happens is that parents need to understand that Dual Immersion Academy switched from a 50-50 model to a 90-10 model. A 90-10 model starts with 90% of the time, of the instructional time in Spanish in kindergarten and first grade in this case, and 10% in English. And it goes gradually, it gradually changes towards a 50-50 model by fourth, fifth grade usually. Now, students will eventually be proficient in English, academically, writings, reading, everything. However, they usually are stronger in Spanish, as Asia was pointing out. She, like, her kid was very proficient in Spanish, that he was able to understand and everything. Now, it's true that because Spanish is prioritized, it becomes stronger, but research shows, like Colin and Baker, there's a lot of research that shows the 90-10 models will fulfill the goals that Karen was pointing out of being bilingual and biliterate, and in India, also bicultural.
Carolyn, you have something to add?
Our model, state models, are 50-50, so that is one of the rationales behind that. And we know a lot of programs around the country over the years had been 80-20, 90-10. Our legislature chose, based on the research that they were looking at, to do 50-50 for the reasons that this parent, Asia, mentions, is that we have a strong English language arts program. So, and we're monitoring the students' progress in math and science and reading in English. And so part of the reason for 50-50 is what she's describing. Though I do believe that there are some advantages to 90-10. It just does not happen to be the model that we are doing statewide. The charter school can certainly do that, and long term they'll see maybe possibly different results in terms of language proficiency. But we're trying to look at academic progress and language proficiency at the same time. So that's why we are doing 50-50. So most importantly, we're glad that her child is happy and doing well wherever he or she is.
Asia, thanks for the call. We're talking about language immersion programs in Utah. My guests are Carolyn Schubach, Associate Director of the Dual Immersion and Gifted Programs at Granite School District. Also, Juan Freire, he's a former teacher at the Dual Immersion Academy, DIA, a charter school here in Salt Lake City. If you've got questions or comments, give us a call. 801-355-TALK is our number. 801-355-8255, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. We need to take a quick break. We'll be right back. This is City Views on KCPW Salt Lake City. This is City Views. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce. Utah outpaces all other states when it comes to language immersion programs, classes where elementary students spend at least half their class time in Spanish or Chinese or French and the other half in English. What are the challenges and benefits of a dual immersion experience? You can join our conversation. 801-355-TALK is our number, or you can send email to cityviews@kcpw.org. On the program, Carolyn Schubach, a Associate Director of the Dual Immersion and Gifted Programs at Granite School District, and Juan Friere. He's a former teacher at the Dual Immersion Academy, DIA, a charter school here in Salt Lake City. This from Facebook. Brian Jensen writes, "I think it's a great idea. The younger kids are, the quicker they can learn a new language." And also on Facebook, David Chittister says, "This is a very important issue. Immigrants from foreign language-speaking countries are losing their language. They don't read it, they don't write it, they don't study it in school. Imagine what it would be like if we didn't have to take English in school." Let's go back to the phones, and joining us on the line, George from Salt Lake City. George, welcome. George, are you there?
Oh, this is Kevin.
Okay, Kevin, go right ahead.
I know they have a lottery system in order to get into these programs, and I've been told by many of the people in charge of the program that it's very difficult, slight chance, considering all the parents that want their children in these programs to be picked as a lottery winner.
Okay, so difficulty in getting your child into an immersion program. Carolyn Schubach, how difficult is it to get into the immersion programs in Granite School District?
In Granite School District, we have 9 schools, and we do a lottery at each of the schools. And at all but about 3 of our schools, pretty much everyone right now is able to get in. We do have waiting lists in probably 3 of our schools. I can't speak for the other districts. I think it depends on the school and the neighborhood if there are lots of families that want their children in. All of us do lotteries because it's the most fair way. And we also, statewide, are continuing to add programs. I believe we're 14 new programs this year. The number I have is 57 statewide, and the goal is to have 100 programs within the next 3 years. So school districts are looking, when there's heightened interest, looking at other sites in their school district and languages to add more programs. So we're watching that, very closely. But right now in our district, most of our families are able to get in. We do have a few schools where we have more children than we can take, and we have waiting lists.
This is a report from the State Office of Education, mm-hmm. That dual immersion programs will soon be available to students in every elementary school in Park City,
yes,
in the Park City School District. So I imagine we are going to see many more of these immersion mm-hmm. programs. Kevin, thanks so much for the call. Let's go back to the phones and let's see if I can get this right. Is this Camille? Camille. George? Looks like I'm having some problems with the phone lines. 801-355-TALK is our number.
Hello.
Hi. Is this George?
Yes, and how are you?
Thanks. I'm good, thanks. Sorry for the technological issues here. George, go right ahead.
Yeah, my comment is I know all these, you know, close families, two families that they started, you know, having languages before 5 years old, and they are around now. Now some of them speak 5 to 7 languages. They have 6 children. And the other ones have about at least 2 for easily. And with no problem, they can talk straight Spanish or straight English to the mother and the father because they are from different countries.
Mm.
And that, you know, it helps them even in their brain, to develop their brain and do better at school. All these kids are straight A's that I know them. And they had all the time speaking to the mother, in this case Spanish, to the father in English, because father doesn't speak any Spanish. He's learning, so. But, you know, they're only 5 years old, and they're already totally bilingual. And also, it helps the people in the future, especially in my case. I know 4 or 5 now. And what happened is that when they hire you, you're in the list, a long list, a lot of people, then they're 10 final, and usually I will get the job because I'm bilingual or trilingual, because they want me to, you know, talk to the customers that have in Spanish customers. And that's the way, you know, it helps. So I'm pretty excited that, you know, somebody's taking. Also, the Air Force here in Salt Lake City, the school in Salt Lake City, this is the only school in the whole country that teaches all the languages. So when they fly, they can take, you know, their teachers or their pilots from here to go to different countries so they can sell the plane in their own language. They don't have to explain, you know, in English and then the translator. They speak exactly in the language, you know, could be Chinese, could be, you know, any South American country, advice planes from the United States, they have to have a pilot that speaks perfect the language.
Mm.
So it helps a lot.
George, thanks very much for those comments. Juan, is that your experience, that children are able to to navigate these two different languages very easily, especially when they learn so young.
Yes. Kids are able to do that from a very early age. And that's actually what we always recommend. I'm, as a university instructor, as a former teacher in a dual immersion program, and also from family experiences, I always recommend that parents will tag the minority language at home, and then that, because children will learn, here in the United States, they will learn English anyways, and so they can, if parents speak the minority language at home, if parents speak different languages, they can speak, let's say, for example, French and Spanish, the children will always differentiate very well. They will know that they will have to speak French to mom and Spanish to dad, and when they go to outside, they will be speaking English to the other people. I mean, they can differentiate very well. And
so making that mental switch, not a problem.
Yes, not a problem at all, and that's something very recommendable because someone pointed out before, we have in the United States, we have a big problem, a big issue with language loss. A lot of kids, a lot of parents that come here to the United States from other countries, they think that their children need English to succeed, not realizing that if they stop speaking the minority language, then children will eventually become monolingual, English monolingual, and other children will be learning the language that this kid just lost.
Carolyn Schubach, George made a good point about being competitive workplace.
I think that's one of the reasons that our legislature supported us so much with this, is they are looking at job and career opportunities for our kids in this global economy. Right now, Utah has all kinds of business connections with Latin America, with Brazil, with China. And these are the children, as this our former caller mentioned, they're the ones that are going to be getting these jobs, just like he said, when he applies for a job. The fact that he's trilingual, he's more versatile, he's more marketable. And I think that's what many of our parents are realizing, that they're able to give their children, along with, you know, a regular academic program in the subjects that all the other children are learning, they're going to be bilingual. Mm.
George, thanks very much for the call. 801-355-TALK is our number. And we'll go now to Lee in Salt Lake City. Lee, welcome.
Hi, thank you. I am a Chinese-speaking mother, and we speak to my children in Chinese. So I'm interested in putting them in the dual immersion program, but I'm also concerned about the educational opportunities. I'd like to also put them in the advanced program. Is that possible to do both dual immersion and advanced?
Lee, a good question. Carolyn Schubach, can you do a gifted and a second language?
No. I can only speak for my district. We have gifted services at every elementary school, but we do have two, we call them advanced learning programs, two school sites that are like magnet programs for gifted. And once you're accepted and choose to go to that, that's the program you go to. So the dual immersion programs are at 9 other schools. We have 2 Chinese schools. So, no, it's one of those things where you are choosing one program or the other program. The gifted program you have to qualify for and be tested for. The Chinese programs are open to all students and, as we mentioned earlier, a lottery. And that's where parental choice comes in, and where parents want to look very carefully at both programs and see which is the best fit for their child and their special talents and also their personality, and which one would be best for them. We do know that, obviously, in the language programs, children are very, very challenged intellectually and cognitively as well. But that's really a parental choice issue, assuming that they would qualify for a gifted program. Mm.
Lee, thanks so much for the call. Speaking of Chinese immersion, they're becoming very popular in Utah. And it's a little different from the Spanish and the French, which mm-hmm. use the same alphabet.
Right.
I'm wondering, how difficult is it to stay proficient in English when the second language uses a completely different alphabet?
You know, so far we're finding, and again, we're only to the third grade, but our children are reading and writing very well in English, just as to be expected. And they're beginning to read and write characters in Chinese. It's not an alphabetic language, so it is in many ways much more challenging. And again, we're working very closely together. We have a number of consultants with Chinese literacy that are working with us. But so far, up until the kids are are achieving in language arts at the same level as their peers, because we look closely, and in some cases higher in English, and still learning, beginning to learn to read and write stories and write in Chinese. It is pretty amazing, I'll tell you that, when you're in those classrooms and see that the children are writing the characters. And, you know, they're in the other class, they're learning phonics, they're learning to sound out words, they're learning to begin to read in English. And it is a different kind of language structure in Chinese. But so far, it's working very well. And we do have Chinese immersion programs in other states that we have worked closely with and had visited in Portland, Oregon. They've been doing this for quite a long time. So we have some models. And in San Francisco, we have models of and folks that we work with to know how to instruct the children appropriately in the development of the characters. So it is, but it is very intriguing. You're right. It's very different than French or Spanish, an alphabetic language.
Sure. Juan, I want to ask you, your experience in the classroom, what if the parent doesn't speak the second language? How does the parent support this kind of education or help with homework that's in Spanish when they don't speak that language themselves?
And that's a good question. All parents can support their children one way or the other. If parents do not speak Spanish, in this case, parents can always, as a teacher, I would always tell my parents to read to them. I mean, to focus on the English, because those academic keywords will transfer into Spanish in the classroom. Regarding homework, for example, it's a little different, of course. There's multiple online dictionaries, wordreference.com, for example, I use it a lot. They can always go back to the dictionary and help their kid. However, parents still need to push their kids. So, because if the parents are doing everything, like if then children won't be motivated, which is a very important factor. When children go to the dual immersion classroom and they are not motivated because their parents are complaining, saying, well, we cannot do this homework, this is not making any sense, children are not motivated, and that's that determines language learning more than verbal intelligence or any other factors. Kids can learn another language, whether they are in special needs or whether they are gifted and talented, whether they are minority students, majority students, whether they speak one language or three. But motivation is a very, very, very big factor. And parents need to help them. Another way to help them is to have, because I taught a two-way immersion program where there were Spanish-speaking children and English-speaking children, or parents can also find Spanish-speaking parents and they can help each other. That's another way to
network.
Do that.
So a network. Carolyn Schubach?
It is a question that parents ask us, and you can imagine, especially with the Chinese and the French.
Sure.
And we work closely with parents to, most of all, you know, homework should be something that children can do. It's not necessary, and this is not necessarily unique to language programs. Homework is something children should be able to do. It's practice that they've already learned at school. Homework is really not parents' work. It's the child's work. But we do know that parents want to try and help their kids, so sometimes we will give some of the directions possibly on an online. The teacher may have an online, a website, where she tells the parents the children each week will be bringing home homework in math, and the directions will be in Chinese, and your child can read them, but the directions will be working on multiplication. So communication with parents is very, very important. It is one of the questions parents always have before they enter their kids in the program. We have parent meetings. How am I going to help my child with homework? As the children get older, it does get more complex, but I think Juan's point is very important. If the children are motivated, they're going to work hard to even try and explain things to their parents. So, but the homework is always an important question, and important that we as teachers communicate well with the parents on what kind of work the child will be doing. I think there's frustration with homework in all kinds of settings, not
sure.
Just in language programs, for those of us who are parents.
That's another show. Our time is short, but I want to ask both of you finally, is this a good choice? Is immersion a good choice for all kids? Carolyn Schubach.
Well, I really do believe it's the parent and family choice. this. The parents are the ones that know their child and know if their child's going to respond well and be interested and motivated. Most of the time, kids are excited about something if their parents are excited about it. I really find that most of the parents who put our kids in, they know their kids want to do this. It obviously is not a choice for everyone because not everyone is choosing it. And I think that's what's really nice about these programs. They're a wonderful opportunity for people who see the importance of it. But for those who do not want to do it, we obviously have the regular traditional classroom programs that we also do. We feel we do very good with. So it again is a parent choice. You ask if it's for everyone. You know, in many countries, it is. Language learning is for everyone.
Well, that's why I was going to ask. Juan, you're from Spain. In Europe, it's very common, to have a requirement for a second language in the primary grades. Do you think it's a good choice for...
It's a perfect choice. Caroline is totally right, and Grand School District is doing a great work, and it's for everyone. I mean, but it's true that it's a parent choice. Children can learn more than one language. They can be... I mean, dual immersion... has three goals, bilingualism, biliteracy, and biculturalism or multiculturalism. Children will be more open-minded. They will have better opportunities. They will be able to interact with more people here in Utah. Utah is changing demographics. We have more minority people coming to this country, to this state, and to this country too. It's perfect for minority students because, as we were saying before, they won't lose their first language. We want them to be bilingual. We want to give those children more opportunities. It's perfect for majority students because they will help give them something else, something it will add to what they already have. It's perfect for children with special needs. Research shows that a special education child won't do worse if that kid is in a dual immersion setting. He will do as good as if he was in an English only school. So I mean, it's perfect for everyone, I believe, and that's what I've seen as a teacher and what research shows. And so yeah, I would encourage everyone to go ahead and do it.
Juan Ferreira studies. I need an immersion class. He's a graduate student at the University of Utah, a former teacher at the Dual Immersion Academy, a charter school in Salt Lake City. And Juan, thanks so much for the time.
Mm-hmm.
Carolyn Schubach, Associate Director of the Dual Immersion and Gifted Programs at Granite School District. And thanks to you.
Thank you.
Coming up next, a conversation about libraries and how they're changing. But first, a break. This is City Views on KCPW Salt Lake City. Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce, and this is City Views. Goodbye, card catalog. Hello, e-readers. Salt Lake City Library recently added Kindle access to over 6,000 titles. You can check out e-books from libraries in the city, Salt Lake County, Weber County, and through the state's online library service called Pioneer. Joining me to talk about the way technology is changing libraries, Julianne Hancock is the Communication Director for the Salt Lake City Library System. And Julianne, thanks so much for coming by.
Thanks for having me.
Also with us, David Lankus is the director of the Information Institute at Syracuse University and an associate professor in the School of Information Studies at Syracuse. He's the author of the book, The Atlas of New Librarianship, and he joins me now by phone from his office in Syracuse, New York. And Professor Lankus, thanks so much for being here.
My pleasure. Thank you.
And if you'd like to join us, 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. How are you using the library differently? You can also give us comments on cityviews at kcpw.org. Julianne, I want to start with you. I understand over 20,000 titles have been downloaded from the city's library website so far this year on e-book readers. Tell us how consumers are using libraries these days.
You know, I think it's really interesting that people look at the changes in books and the way that we're receiving information and technology, how it's impacting the exchange of information and resources, and they think that the library is going to die as a result of it. We've seen this discussion. The internet was supposed to kill the library. And if nothing
Radio
else...
Radio, too.
Yes. And if nothing else, we've seen the use of libraries increase exponentially, especially in these economic times. Just in the last year, we've had a 10% increase in circulation in the Salt Lake City library system to 3.8 million items. And the use of public libraries in Utah on average has gone up 52%, 12% up for items statewide. And so I think you're seeing people use libraries in a lot of different ways. E-readers have provided us a great opportunity to expand the model of, you know, exchange of information and resources. But I also think that there's a misconception out there that libraries are monuments of books. If the library is a monument of books, librarianship has been all about change since the advent of libraries, and we're about knowledge creation and exchange, not just the artifact of the book.
David Lankus, history of libraries, one of adaptation, being flexible as these new technologies come on board?
Absolutely. I mean, I'm sure, a lot of the history gets traced back to places like the Library of Alexandria in ancient Egypt, and I'm sure there they had a committee arguing about the introduction of this new mobile technology called the scroll. Yeah. And then we took chains off of books and things like that. Libraries have always been about, once again, well put, knowledge creation and the tools we use to do it, certainly books and manuscripts and scrolls and cuneiform tablets, and these days it's e-readers and MP3 players and et cetera. Librarianship still has the same mission, the technology adapts.
Although I have to say, you know, technology does seem to be redefining what a library is to some extent. I mean, let's talk about space. Libraries have always been this physical repository for books and resources. And when these books are being condensed into a digital format, will libraries of the future really need to have buildings? David Lankus?
Well, what you're seeing is a shift where the library, the physical place, used to be the tools and infrastructure of the librarian to do their work. In essence, those stacks and the books and the catalogs and the rooms and space, we needed that to catalog and put it together and such. Now, as we're needing less and less space, this actually happened in school libraries a long time ago when we replaced all those big banks of encyclopedias with CDs and then the web. Now it's really becoming a community space, and we're finding that libraries can really begin to adapt and meet the needs of communities in a different way. Rather than coming in and finding materials, they can come in and find each other. They can have collaborative spaces. A lot of public libraries are creating sort of entrepreneuriums, places for people to come in and start businesses and work outside of the home. People can come in and have new types of social interactions. We have kids coming in and producing multimedia projects, and that requires space. It just doesn't require space with stacks and stacks of books.
Julianne Hancock, that seems to be what we're seeing next door.
Yeah, the Salt Lake City Library was very progressive in the design of our library. It definitely was created with the community in mind. We had over 90,000 people attend 2,200 programs at the library last year. We're all about facilitating dialogue, and we have a lot of community events, such as tonight we're having a discussion on redistricting, and Senator Ben McAdams and Representative Kenneth Summison will be there to discuss with the community what redistricting means to them. And to the heart, that's what librarianship really is to encourage that dialogue. It makes communities better.
We're speaking with Julianne Hancock, Communication Director for the Salt Lake City Library System, also with us David Lankus, professor at Syracuse University and author of the book, The Atlas of New Librarianship. If you'd like to join us, you have questions or comments about how libraries are changing and the way that you use libraries is changing, 801-355-TALK is our number, 801-355-8255. Julianne Hancock, I guess the big news from the city library is you've now added Kindle access. So how hard is that to, how does it work?
We use a service called Overdrive, and Overdrive provides our readers and our library users access to all of our digital downloadable books and audiobooks. They can now use e-readers such as the iPad with the Kindle application, but it uses the EPUB reading format as well as the Kindle compatible format. It's not a difficult service to use at all, and I really think it's an opportunity for us to open our doors even wider online, digitally. People can now access the library and use our resources from the comfort of their pajamas at home, which I think is very appealing to a lot of people. And the numbers show it. Since we introduced the Kindle only about 2.5 weeks ago, we've had almost 1,000 checkouts of Kindle books, which accounts for almost half of all of our downloadable resources. We also provide tools such as the entire Sony Music Collection you can download for free using a service called Freegal. We provide access to databases online that people can access from the comfort of their home as well. So it's not just about the Kindle or the tool or the technology. It really is about just finding new ways of connecting people with information.
David Lankus, Kindle, the Nook, e-readers. How are publishers and authors reacting to this when it comes to libraries? Have they entered into the discussion about how their work is circulated in digital form?
Some have, some haven't. The Harper's Collins came out with, working with Overdrive, came out with an announcement where they were going to restrict circulation of an item to 26 times.
26?
Yeah, a lot of libraries went a little nuts. I actually had many librarians who said, after 26 times of circulating the physical book, I'm looking forward to getting a new copy anyway. But a lot of people criticized them, but they were one of the few publishers who actually engaged in this conversation. Many others are saying, well, no, we're not going to put e-books into a library environment because we're worried it's going to take away from sales. But they have. This is part of a larger issue, which is they're getting increasingly authors sitting going, do I need publishers to do this? And many an author is looking at places like the public library, places like Amazon, places where they can distribute without this sort of intermediary. And that's going to be a big change for libraries. It's going to really move them from the idea of buying agents, places where we go and buy stuff, to places where people can produce them, places where they're going to partner with local authors and partner with local music producers and become more of a distribution system and not just this sort of buying a bunch of aggregated data together.
Are libraries digitizing their entire collections, David Lankus?
Well, there's a limit to what you can digitize because of intellectual property. You can't, for example, take a book, throw it on a Xerox machine, copy your own, make your own copy and walk away. Same way libraries can't take a book, scan the whole thing, and then just distribute their copy of it. So there's a lot of legal restrictions around it. However, what you are finding is public libraries, a lot of academic libraries, are digitizing out-of-print books. They're digitizing books where public domain material, and they're making those increasingly available through services such as the HathiTrust. And, in fact, they're part of, a lot of this big discussion about Google Books is actually a partnership with libraries around it. So certainly there's a huge movement of libraries of all types to digital materials, but it's not a technical question so much as a legal question, which is going to determine how fast that happens.
Julianne Hancock, so the City Library, you can download an e-book. You can also download an audiobook. I'm wondering if there's going to be a time when you can check out DVDs via download.
We actually offer streaming video right now through a service called Access Video. If anyone visits our website, they're able to visit in a collection. And I'm not sure how many titles we have, but everything from PBS documentaries to the BBC, a lot of informative programming that people are able to stream from the comfort of their home through the library's website. So I think you're already seeing that happening. And of course, our audiovisual materials are some of the most highly circulated materials in our collection. People love to use the library to access even new titles as well as feature films and just entertainment in general.
Our time is running short, but technology isn't cheap. It takes a lot to invest into keeping up the pace with all of this technological change, and library budgets are traditionally thin. I guess I'll put this question to both of you. Can budgets keep pace with the technology needs or desires of library consumers? Julianne Hancock?
I always say that we live in a community that we're very fortunate to have so much support for. The Salt Lake City, and I know the county as well, is fortunate to have the support of our community. As long as the community wants and needs our services, we will continue to provide them no matter how they look. As we're in the process of building our Glendale and Marmalade branches, it's been really interesting to hear from the community what they want those libraries to look like. But we continue to invest in technology, and we continue to invest in what we think the library of the future looks like and responding to our community ideas they need. I know a lot of other libraries around the country, and David can probably speak to this better, are struggling in that front. And you know, we keep an eye on what's happening in the industry, but we're very fortunate that our community is so responsive in investing in our libraries.
David Lankus, about 10 seconds left. Your thoughts on the budget and keeping pace with technology.
During the Great Depression, the New York Public Library's budget actually went up. These libraries that are finding that they are meeting important and essential social services, from helping people find jobs to helping people find new careers to helping people start businesses, this is an essential place to do it, and many communities are realizing that they can centralize services in a library service to do it. Certainly, these are tough times for libraries, and the bottom line is that libraries under even tighter budgets can be great libraries, but they're not going to be the same library that they were 10 years ago, and they need to get a good public working with them to define what it is that this community wants to do best.
David Lankus, author of The Atlas of New Librarianship and professor at Syracuse University. David, thanks so much for the time.
Thank you.
Julianne Hancock is also with us from the Salt Lake City Library. And Julianne, thanks to you.
Thank you.
City Views is a production of KCPW News in Salt Lake City. Tomorrow, Navajo Nation President Ben Shelley. Join us for that tomorrow. For City Views, I'm Jennifer Napier-Pierce.